morning, and welcome to the first episode of Classical Voice Canada, where we meet artists and discuss classical voice together. I'm your host, Kira Braun, and I'm so very glad you've joined us today. Today's guest is Canadian-Estonian mezzo-soprano Christina Maria Auger. Welcome, Christina, to Classical Voice Canada. I'm so excited to have you today on the very first podcast as our first guest.
Thanks for having me.
I have a few questions lined up for you, so let's just kick it off right now. I would love to know a little bit about your background and where you got your education in voice in particular, and a little bit more about yourself as a performer.
So my path was, like so many, not direct into singing. I think it was always a quiet dream of mine to perform in some way when I was a kid. I just didn't tell anyone. And that was something that was very private. But I always had the dream I was going to be an orthopedic surgeon. I was going to science. You know, I did a lot of music in high school. I went to North Toronto, which is a very active musical school. So I had lots of opportunities, but the plan was always science. And so when I was at McMaster, I studied geochemistry, but I also sang in the choir because, you know, so many of us are multifaceted in our interests. And the conductor, David Haller, reached out to me after I auditioned and had gotten us one of the solos for Vivaldi Gloria. And then we started talking. I was like, oh, I'd love to take some lessons. And he taught as well. And then he told me, you know, you could get into a music school, like no problem, like you could. And I was like, what was my response? And from there, I realized it was just where I was in my life. And I finished my degree, and that was always in the plans.
That's fantastic.
But then I also did auditions. And then I got into University of Toronto for the performance program. And that was kind of the start. I feel like I kind of tripped and fell into it sometimes, but yeah.
That's a wonderful story. And it's always nice to be able to take back the earliest of our beginnings to one individual and always remember that person and remember the impact they've had on you as a musician and in your life and on your pursuits.
Exactly. I mean, there were also moments, other teachers that affected my life before then, but the one where it just totally threw me in a different direction.
That's amazing, unbelievable for my life. Oh my goodness. So you went to U of T for music then after McMaster.
Yes.
All right. And you must have had a wonderful teacher there. Who was your teacher?
I started with, and I was really lucky because every teacher you deal with gives you something different. So I started with Patrick Raftery, who was the one who introduced me to classical music and voice in that way. I had almost no knowledge of opera oratorio before there. Then I was always a choir and orchestra girl. I played percussion. So he introduced me to the whole art song world, to everything. And I learned so much from him that way. And then I then studied with Wendy Nielsen for my third and fourth year. And then for my master's in the opera program with her. I mean, that was where I started really finding, after getting a bit of that bass, was finding my full voice.
Yeah.
Whether what fach it is doesn't really matter. I've switched a million times and will continue to. But those were the big years for auditioning, for the big performances I had, and prepping me for those artistically that way.
Well, Wendy Nielsen has quite a wonderful background herself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of things.
And a fantastic teacher. And then after that, when I was in my year before moving to Europe, I worked with Laura Tucker, which was the first mezzo I worked with, which was very, very impactful. And that was something, we didn't work for that long and that much, just because I was working like crazy. She was obviously teaching at the university as well. So there's only so much time you can find.
Exactly.
But it's somebody who, through a short time, also impacted me hugely.
So
I was very lucky.
Yes, wow. Okay, so while you were in university or even afterward, I imagine you participated in some master classes.
Yes, I would say I haven't had as many of the public master classes as some others have, but I have one that I remember at my second year, U of T Opera. Sandra Radonovsky came, and I will say that day, I don't know what happened. I tried, but I didn't quite get it. But 2 years later, which is a classic singer thing, is, and this is why you always take what you get and like, okay, maybe I didn't understand it, but just absorb it and think about it. 2 years later, it made all the sense. It's something I keep going back to, is this
Right.
biting of an apple in your middle voice towards the lower. It just didn't make, I couldn't compute in what I was doing at that point. But now it's been something that keeps coming back. And so the first time somebody said something totally different, but then I thought about what she had said. It was a different teacher. It was in Germany. And then I did that. She's like, yes, exactly that. And I was like, well, there we go. It was just timing when my voice was ready for it, was
That's
then I was able to
a
use it.
story. Yeah. So biting
So
an apple, it takes your placement into a different spot and you can
spot.
bring a richer tone. Is that right?
I don't know if it's a richer tone, but it's especially, it's somehow, it's, I think it has something to do with the jaw release, but also maybe not, I'm not the biggest ped person. So I know for me, there's a sense of in the middle voice, maybe that I don't over open, or because I'm not in even close to the passaggio yet. And this is especially useful when going through the middle voice to the lower to the chest.
I
And I
see.
find it just helps me manage the lower passaggio, the true
Repetition. Yeah.
passaggio path, which is actually a lot harder for a lot of female singers. It's, we don't focus on it as much,
Right.
but it's really important. And especially in my repertoire.
Yeah. Okay, so that is a great liaise right into questions about your voice type and your repertoire. What kind of repertoire does a mezzo get to sing and or operatic roles that are you're best suited for?
Call me a mezzo, call me a soprano. I have done both, and I still sing both.
Fantastic.
Well, actually, my current teacher, who Anneli Pepo, who's in a, turns out, and now I've met an Estonian to bring back in all of my lines. But she sings at the Volksoper here in Vienna, and she's a fabulous teacher and coach. But also a very similar voice type to me, where she's always been on the edge. She is a mezzo soprano, but dips into the soprano roles on occasion, because it's, there's a huge, and so what we've had the discussion, I have these paranoid moments. Half my audition rep is me closer to soprano-y. I mean, mezzos do it, but it's, and then it's like, no, you're a Jugendliche Dramatisch, and that's enough. Don't worry about it. You're a mezzo, fine. But it's because I like to sit in the middle.
Yes.
I don't like to sit where the soprano, so much of the soprano repertoire sits. And when you're asking about what repertoire, I am slowly going from the lyric to dipping my tone more and more to the dramatic repertoire, which is fun and is a challenge. But so much of it sits, there's so many roles that are, whether a soprano or a mezzo role, sit in the middle and go up and down quite a bit. And there's quite a bit of that fricka, even, okay, and these are all kind of dream roles for me as I'm talking.
Okay.
But you know, it's looking to the future as I'm just getting into them. That's where Fach isn't, it is important, and of course people like to know what box you fit in,
Right.
but I'm really enjoying starting to explore the Wagner, the Strauss more and more. And with those, also keeping my toes in the Mozart, because that's
Oh,
what's
yes.
helping it keep balanced. And so I'm kind of hopping back and forth.
They say that Mozart is like a massage for your voice, right? Whenever you need to really feel solid, go back to the Mozart.
Exactly, which wasn't something I felt as a young singer because I wasn't quite figuring it out yet. But now it just, it forces me to really slim, not get smaller, but really concentrate my voice in a different way, which then helps me because then I bring that energy to the repertoire that's more tempting to oversing or do funny things. And it's just like, no, just sing with your voice, it's fine. You don't have to do anything.
And you said the word Fach, and just for our listeners, that's just a German word that means basically what you said, a box to categorize a voice type into.
Yeah.
Right. So we get all our knickers in a knot about what our Fach is. And sometimes you just fall into it naturally and it may change over time.
Exactly. Also, some people never do fit into one exactly. They were created to actually protect singers so that when you were in an ensemble, so if you were a working singer in the house, there was only certain roles you were allowed to do. That's all gone out the window. I mean, people do all sorts of crazy things and you're ending up doing way too many roles and roles you shouldn't, you know, it has to, that's a whole, another long discussion on the Fest system. But also with that is, it's really adjusting. And there are so many female singers that are on the edge of mezzo and soprano, especially in the more dramatic voice. And there's, well, and it's exactly, you could be in between and it's so common, but then everyone's like, well, you have to be one or the other. I'm like, well,
no.
I say I've picked my lane, and then I very wisely, I have options for, if I were to have an audition, I know that depending who I'm singing for, what I can bring, what I can, are they more open? Are they, okay, you have to sing exactly what they understand, then okay, keep it more traditional, you make it work.
That's right. It's never fair to be stuck in a pigeonhole and told you must sing only this repertoire because, and it's much better to be able to explore things and figure out where you fit. And sometimes you move in and out of that box and it's okay.
Exactly. And styles and everything. I mean, I am definitely have been enjoying some of the more low soprano-y stuff lately, which has been exciting. Scares me a little because I think why people love the Fach is then they can identify as something. Mm-hmm. And there's comfort in that. And you go, okay, because there's certain roles and there's often certain types. But then you read, there's this big Kloiber book. Don't ask me what the title is, but it's the kind of like, what roles go with which Fachs? But then you look between certain Fachs, like half of them are in the both of them. That's, and you go, okay, I can kind of, you start making choices. Okay, I can kind of straddle these two. Don't do the things that are crazy on one end low or one end high. But if I kind of stick in the middle and the things that overlap, I'm fine.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think also for a singer in the very early stages of their education, it takes a little while to figure out where your voice sits the most comfortably. Mm-hmm. Because I remember trying to sing one or two certain arias that I couldn't sing them. And I didn't understand why until I realized that I have a light lyric voice, not a dramatic voice. So I just leave that stuff alone now.
Exactly. Well, and you see, okay, if it feels good, keep exploring it. You know, mm-hmm. And then yes, of course, there's certain things, especially as a very young, like I would say when you're in that like late teens, early 20s, I started later with the singing where you're literally protecting your voice. Yeah. It's very important to, you know, not jump and also not have bad technique and pieces that you become your bread and butter later.
Right. That's absolutely important.
I think especially like going back to where I was when I was so focused on it because I felt like I was, you know, it was my second degree already. I hadn't been really in the music community. So I felt like I was catching up, which really wasn't true. I mean, in some ways it was, but it was more in my head. And yeah, it was, I wish I could just go back to me and go like, it's fine. Just sing that nice middle-y stuff. Stick with the Italian 24 art songs and arias. Uh-huh. You can sing them with your voice, you know, art song, sing with your voice that you have. Don't feel like you have to be, you know, super quiet because it's art song right now. Just figure your stuff out. Don't worry about everyone else.
So you've mentioned a few different genres of classical voice repertoire, opera, art song, oratorio. Which would you say is your favorite to perform?
I love opera. I love pretending to be someone else and have the character. I'm actually putting together a recital right now and I'm excited to be currently working on the art song rep a bit more. Not sure where it'll come when. It's more of a just, it's something to work on for myself and mm-hmm. also just some fun and yeah, and a different, and making sure to keep my voice nimble and a little more, to, especially as I said, going into more dramatic rep, just to keep my foot in the lighter, not lighter repertoire, but in different styles mm-hmm. to make sure I don't lose it. But I'm starting to remind myself how vulnerable you need to be an art song for it to be real. And I was like, oh, I forgot this, because it's been a long time since I've done a recital, since university.
Vulnerable in terms of you are virtually naked up there with only the piano to support you. There's no costume, there's no set. So you really have to speak to and bring that emotion out in other ways, you know, with your eyes and obviously with your voice and the colors that you can sing with. But you're not really going to be acting it out, are there? Are you?
No. And I mean, even if there's a vulnerability for me being a character, because of course you're bringing your own experiences to it, and you have to be emotionally raw in a way for it to be real. Mm-hmm. But I always find I have a protection, like a protective layer that is the character, even when it's all me. I'm like, mm-hmm. but I have a costume. But to make art song real and really resonate, it's poetry. And poetry has to come from you.
Yes.
And so you are speaking to an audience just as much as if you were reading your own poetry. So there is also like, it's just for it to be the best it can be, you really need to let yourself in, really give yourself into it, and yourself, not no trappings, no extra stuff, just the music, the text, you. And the piano, obviously. But there's that's like, that could be very scary.
That's a wonderful analogy to think of with the poetry and bringing it to life. And aren't we lucky that the poetry that we're singing is so beautiful and so moving?
Exactly. I agree 100%.
And I think that that's something for any listeners who aren't really exposed to classical music at this point in time. Maybe art song is a great place to start, because you could easily Google the translation for any art song in another language and follow along and really get a sense of there's a story being told here. There's a love story. There's, you know, somebody that has had a difficult life or a difficult relationship or something like that. And the appreciation becomes easier when you fully understand what you're listening to.
Or all the amazing English art song that's out there. I mean, here I'm in Austria, I was in Germany, I was singing lots in German, obviously, because that is the language. But yes. I mean, if when I think of something that could relate to new listeners, one of my favorites is the Benjamin Butterworth, the Shropshire lad.
Oh.
Because it's beautiful music, beautiful poetry, and then his life, he died young in the war, and then you have these, there's a few of the songs I will cry when I'm listening to them.
Yes.
Because they're so touching, but there's an immediacy to them. The text is understandable, and it's something that you're like, okay, I can understand this, this is beautiful, and I don't need to have anything in between. And I find like that's, I think, the best way to get two people is in the language, so people understand right away. Of course, then you can get into the other stuff, and there's so much fabulous rep in every language. But I think I worked in a very small city in Stralsund on the Baltic Sea in Germany for a year last year, and realizing what repertoire the people that lived there would come out for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always think La Boheme, easy sales. La Boheme barely sold. Fledermaus was, we did 22 shows in the year and they were basically all well sold. Anything in German, often they'll come to, but this is yet again not your big city, big city crowd. They want to come to things they know, they understand, or musical theater, operetta, but they'll come to the Wagner because it's German, but it's because they understand it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've realized here. It's not just in North America where we deal, in the States and Canada where we deal with the language issue. It's also here, you know, it's Europe has the same nips, and you have to pick your repertoire wisely to try to serve your audience.
That's a great observation to make. Thank you for that. So I'm curious, after we've discussed opera and art song, just going back to opera, have you found that you have a preference for any era of operatic work at all?
I love the Romantic era. I am your typical opera singer that loves the schmaltzy lines, long operas. Give it to me. I love the even late Romantics. The crazier it gets, especially that, and that's something I've actually gained more of an appreciation here, because I mean, so much of it was written in Vienna. Strauss was a conductor in the Staatsoper, and so it's, you realize you're kind of in the middle of where it was, and
that's huge.
And I kind of, one of my best memories from this year was, right, my first week at work, I wasn't in the show because I didn't know the piece, so I couldn't jump on with no rehearsals. But then I sat in the audience for their run through for Frau Anna Schatten. That is a Richard Strauss opera, and of his, like, it's the biggest orchestra one. It's, I mean, you start thinking, where's the space in the pit for all of them? But they fit.
Somehow.
And just the orchestra, and you could, it's the Vienna Philharmonic playing, and that's the rep they love the most. You can just hear it in the way they play it. It's their favorite, and it's so rich and over the top, and I love it.
So exciting. I can't even imagine what that must be like.
It was fantastic. And I just love the richness of it, and the so many textures and layers, and I love it.
So that leads me, I guess, a little further down in our questions. You are a member of the opera chorus in Vienna. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Tell us all about that. How did you even end up getting there and going to Vienna?
Well, I realized that chorus jobs, I did getting into the chorus stream, it wasn't the plan when I moved, but I did a studio summer program in Weimar, the Eric Opera Studio Weimar, where you sing for, I got a chance to sing for a few agents, and got good feedback generally. I had just recently switched back to mezzo soprano, so there was, you know, my rep was still, my things were still needed some time to just settle a little, but the chorus agent in Germany, the unemployment agency, also has a artistic side to it. So they actually have both solo and chorus agents. And he was like, I can get you auditions, and I think I can get you working as a second alto in an opera chorus. So then I started doing those auditions, ended up in Northern Germany. And why it was a tempting one was just to get work, but also generally, and this is slowly changing as well, but generally chorus positions, if you're in the like main chorus of opera houses here, are salary jobs, and you have them until you retire.
That's fantastic too. Wow.
And so that has a temptation that the solo career just doesn't give, because it's, you'll never, even if you get fest positions as a soloist, it doesn't have that kind of protection. And I was like, okay, let's just see how this goes. And then, I sang in this smaller house, and then I auditioned for Vienna for fun. Really, I went because I didn't think I'd get it. It would be great. I could see Vienna for a few days, you know, see a bit of Europe more that I had seen. And then I got the job. So, whoops.
Isn't it interesting how when we don't set our expectations all that high, and suddenly we manage to nail it, and exceed our own expectations? Good for you.
Well, and I hadn't been planning on moving so quick, because I had moved so much the year before, so the last thing I had wanted to do was move again, and I was like, well, okay, one more move.
So when did you go to Europe then and start out
there? May 2017, and then I was in Estonia for a year. That's where my grandparents, it's my citizenship. So I was just getting my feet under the ground, did the summer program in Germany, connected with people there. So I was back and forth, then moved to Germany in summer of 2018, then worked there, and moved within Germany a bit. That was a nightmare. August 2019, I moved to Vienna, and now I've been here. not going anywhere. I like my apartment and I love my roommate. So
oh, I'm so happy for you. That's just a dream come true, isn't it?
It is. Well, I mean, like everything, the dreams come with their positives and negatives, but it's been an adventure and I've had some pretty cool experiences this year. So that's
wonderful. I am very curious about some of your performance history. I am sure you've been in several opera productions, and I would really love to know what you would think your highlights were.
My highlight, Dorabella, well, from Così fan tutte, when I did it at Così, which is a summer program run in Sulmona in Italy, and it was, I had the whole, we were double cast, so all of the cast members were fabulous. It was a great team to work with.
Now, is that with Daryl Edwards?
Yes, it was. Hello? I did Dorabella, which for me as a role suited me like a glove. I mean, I was singing as a soprano at that point, so usually it's a mezzo role, yeah. But you know, even then I was kind of hopping in between, but it was the right thing for my voice at the time, but yeah. Also energetically, I don't get to play so many young, fun women. I end up playing a lot of serious people. And while I can find that intensity, my natural energy is quite high. So it was fun to play someone that's just young and carefree and having a blast and overdramatic. And it was, yeah, so it was a fantastic staging. Awesome. My cast, it was a dream. Christina Bell, who's a soprano in Toronto, she sang Fiordaligi. We looks quite similar. We pulled the sisters thing off very well. Vocally, our voices matched. Everything kind of clicked in beautifully. And we just had so much fun. And I learned a lot. It was my first really, really, really big role with so much to take on. And that was just a dream.
That's wonderful. And you got the Mozart massage and a little bit of the exuberant stage persona going all at once.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great.
Exactly.
Well, you think you'll come back to her sometime?
I have unfortunately outgrown her vocally. It's okay. Just, I mean, I could sing it still probably maybe, but it's not what people want to hear and it wouldn't work within the ensemble. As far as Mozart, I'm kind of in the Donna Elvira Vitalia stage of life now. So, which are just older characters, vocally, they can be lighter, they can be heavier. Like it just suits where I'm at a bit more now. So.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. As you grow, right?
Alas.
Now, you are a multilingual person.
And yes.
That's a wonderful ability to have. What is your favorite language to perform in?
I think French. I really like singing in French, and I know lots of people don't. I find I can get pulled into the more Quebecois color sometimes, which they constantly, what are you doing with your French here? Because that has a more bright quality to it. But why French is so good, because there's a real darkness to it, which helps balance out my voice a bit. But also, the composers are amazing. You know, there's just so much beautiful, the repertoire is just so good. So
that's great to hear. I've not really thought of it in that way as far as the French goes. I wouldn't say French is my favorite to sing in, so that's really nice to know.
Yeah, I'm an odd one. Everyone's like, what? You like singing in French? Like, I think because I learned it also quite young and I got really into it as a spoken language in school when I was a kid, and I really took my French classes. I just enjoyed it. So I think that also helps.
But I have heard that you have an affinity to singing in Russian as well. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I haven't as much lately. I did a lot of it before I left. It was kind of funny. There was a stage when half my repertoire was Russian. I did Tatiana from Eugene Onegin, which I loved the music. I think as a role, she is a really cool character, but really, really stretched my acting muscles, because in most of it, she likes to stay in the background. She's not someone that's energetically very forward. She you know, she has moments alone where she's very passionate, but she's a very reserved young woman. And I am not at all. And my my stage presence is very big and loud. So that was a, even when I don't say anything, I tend to exude energy. So that was a tough one. But Russian is great because it's kind of like Italian-ish. People think it's very dark. And yes, it has that darkness to it. But as you, the more you learn and work with awesome Russian coaches, Natalia Matusheva, the best Russian coach in Toronto, have to say. And she helped me so much with combining the vocality and singing technique with the Russian. And then it serves you. And you think of all the amazing Russian singers that are out in the world.
Yes.
There is something there too. So
it's funny you should mention Natalia, because she's going to be another of our guests on the podcast very soon.
Amazing. Yeah. She is just fabulous.
She really is. Now, we both worked with her in that production of Suor Angelica.
Yes. Yes.
So much fun.
That was a highlight of just, I love productions where you get so many fabulous female singers together supporting each other, because everyone thinks that female artists are catty and trying to take each other down. And that is not the truth. I have barely seen that. Maybe one person in my, you know, now 10 years of singing since I started studying. And that was a fabulous group of women.
That's a huge observation to make too. And I think it's also a very big part of who you are as a performer and an individual, when you can get along with and find a camaraderie with your castmates and with the, even with the orchestra, and make a bond with those people. You perform better when you've got that kind of thing going on.
And the people that get hired back aren't the people that have attitude issues. Like, maybe if you have a one in a million voice or are connected in a ridiculous way with somebody really important. But generally, the people that work are the people, and that's actually in the chorus you see. Who are the soloists when we have rehearsals that interact with the chorus? I mean, yes, there's people focused, and that's its own thing. But how the singers treat those that are, you know, quote unquote under them, as the chorus is technically, you know, we're kind of the big crew that comes in for 2 seconds and then leaves. But you see in an A house at the top level, the soloists are, I have yet to see people that are treating people poorly or.
That's nice. Yeah.
And it's good to see, you know, and it's, those are the people that get called back.
Yeah. You don't want to just sweep in your gown and kind of look down your nose at everybody else and do your thing and leave. You've got to make an effort to interact and be pleasant and ask people about their interests and their singing, you know, just learn a little bit. And then
exactly.
Then you find that you have even more support and more followers. So
exactly.
Always how it'll work. Yeah.
And then everyone has fun. You know, everyone enjoys their time on stage and will also help you if you need.
Yes.
That's.
And the other thing is that when you develop those relationships, not only the relationship itself, but musically, as you said, those people pull you up and elevate you over time. Exactly. Every single person that you interact with and work with brings you something else that lifts you, lifts your artistry, lifts your voice, and pushes you into the next thing. And that is a wonderful feeling too. You all feed off each other's energy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago, I think it was, you did some recital work. Was it in Toronto at the Estonian Center?
Yeah, in the Estonian House.
Okay.
Stephen Bell, who is a tenor in the Canadian Opera Company chorus and has been for quite a while now.
Yes.
But we've worked together quite a bit over the years. Now, not so much since I've been here.
Right.
But he started doing some concerts and did recordings with a pianist that was, a music teacher pianist, but stalwart of this Toronto Estonian community and the expatriate Estonian community, Charles Kipper, who was a dear, dear man and a fantastic pianist, passed away now a couple of years ago. But so they started working together on some Estonian art song CDs. So they did, I think, two.
They did.
And then I kind of hopped in just to sing at any concert I could. And we just put a recital together of things we loved singing, some duets. It was a mix of art song, opera. I sang, there's a favorite Estonian, almost, I mean, it's a guitar, it's a piece with guitar. I always considered it a campfire song for myself that a Toronto Estonian musician, but also, I mean, he was by trade, he was, I think, an editor at the Maclean's, but also amazing blues guitarist, awesome musician, but wrote this song that talks about the feeling, and this was during the Soviet era, so hadn't been to Estonia, had this language, and just the sense of what we felt feel our homeland per se is, even though we're, you know, we're not born there, we're, and this beautiful song, and Charles noodled, and I don't, he never wrote it down, which kills me. I was like, I should have gotten him to write it down. Uh-oh. Because he improvised, it was always a little different, a piano accompaniment to this, because he knows what it is, I know what it is with piano, and it was just, so, you know, you go from singing your opera song, your opera arias, to something super simple and heartfelt. And it, and that's the fun of a recital, is you can do what you want. There's no, but nothing that says, okay, it all has to be art song, it all has to be German or whatever. No, you can make it whatever you want to make it.
I agree. Again, not having to fit into a mold and do things by the traditional way, find your own groove and bring a program together that speaks to you and will speak to your audience. Yeah.
We did it thematically, and then we were able to mix, and by kind of picking a theme and a story, then you could go, okay, musical theater piece here because it suits with this, 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 and you just mix around. It's great fun.
So, musical theater. Do you like singing that as well?
I do. Unfortunately, my voice isn't as suited for it. I mean, as a kid, I think that's kind of my brain. I try to remember me singing at home, and I think a lot of it was musical theater. Mm-hmm. But I've always had a voice that just had a roundness to it and a classical. And it came, like, the classical voice that was rounder, fuller, came quite young. And I think already in my teens, it was clearly that. I just didn't know what that was. I was like, well, why can't I sing all the fun musical theater things that everyone else sings my age, you know? What? But, you know, that's the way that goes. But the one thing one of many, many things I missed from this, my small Germany Stralsund theater was, because it's a smaller house, you do everything. In Vienna, the Staatsoper we only do opera and one operetta is Fledermaus. So that's it. Then you have the Volksoper that does operetta, some musical theater. So you have the various theaters, they all have their lane. Whereas when you're in a small town, the house does everything. So we did Kiss Me Kate in German.
Oh.
And it was so much fun. Usually the ballet does all the dancing.
Yeah.
But this time it didn't work scheduling wise. So I actually got to do a lot of extra stuff because I have some dance experience. And so I got to do all sorts of extra bits and, you know, too darn hot, but it's viel zu heiß because it's in German. And we also did Jesus Christ Superstar in the summer outdoors, beautiful setting, right on the harbor as the sun was setting. It was gorgeous, but then also in German. So that was an adventure and so much fun. I enjoyed it so much. I missed that.
Wow, that does sound like a challenge and a lot of fun.
Yes.
In the opera chorus, what is coming up next for you then?
Well, of course, it depends on COVID. We have it, our last performance was March 12th. It was Turandot. And then we had rehearsals. That was a Sunday. Monday, we had a rehearsal. Tuesday morning, we had a rehearsal. Tuesday night, no rehearsal and nothing since then. We did have some music rehearsals in June that were done with a quarter. Our main chorus is 92 members. So we would do a quarter of the chorus in various mixes at a time and with lots of distance and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Currently, we're starting the season as planned with less people in the audience. They haven't given us all of the measures because they don't know yet. what exactly the government is going to be kind of putting into place as more and more research is coming out. I know for sure there will be regular testing, is going to be part of whatever we do. I will say there's a little bit of stress with what I'm seeing. If we're really doing in the end of September, the French Don Carlos, which has 100 people on stage at once for some of the scenes, I can't understand how that's possible. But I know that I'm waiting till August to start asking more questions from our union and stuff of how exactly is this working? Just because there's some operas that are quite small, and small opera houses have changed their schedules. Like my best friend, she's still working in Stralsund, and they changed their whole season. So they're starting with Dido and Aeneas, because that you can do distanced, small ensemble on stage, small orchestra, but a big theater, you can't, everything's planned, 10 years in advance. Yeah. And we do 50 to 60 different operas a year. So you can't just change it. It's like, it's all been planned on which sets come when, which costumes come when. So right now it seems to be going as is-ish. I just don't know yet. So, but we plan to go back August 20th to some rehearsals. So I will see what in August is when I'm going to do a bit more. Everyone's on vacation right now, so not the time to start chasing people down for questions they don't know the answers to yet. So
right now you might be looking at a little bit of music, but you're mostly in vacation mode. Is that fair to say?
Yes, especially now since it's actually vacation, and it seems ridiculous because we were home for so long. But the theater's closed. That can't change. The theater is closed, but as employees, because we're employees, we were put on the kind of, I guess it's sort of a furlough. I'm not sure. Kurzarbeit, which we got a certain 80% of our income, which was really amazing. And that's yet again, that's kind of was been the situation, I think, much of Germany and here for those that aren't freelancers.
That's really great to hear that they looked after you like that.
Well, that's the state employee situation. We're basically state employees in some ways. I mean, where the funding comes from and all that, and the funding percentages. But it's also the amount of people employed by the theaters in Vienna. I mean, it's not just us, the singers, orchestras. It's also all of the various costume tech people within our house, but then we basically have kind of one company that works for us, the Volksoper, and then the Burgtheater, which is straight theater, and they make all the new costumes and sets.
Okay.
It's art for art. And so those are all employees as well. And so, I mean, if every cultural employee in Vienna was unemployed all at once, it would just be chaos. So it was the best way to kind of keep things, I think, at something.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy for you on that front as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I felt so much seeing what's going on elsewhere. I was like, I'm so lucky, and I know that, and I'm so thankful.
Well, that kind of segues into another thought that I've had about musicians maybe that haven't been so fortunate as to have a backup like that. And you with your environmental science degree, is that something that you think you might fall back on someday if you needed to?
I would have to, because I'm so out of the swing of things in geochemistry. I would have to, if I wanted to go back into that specific track, I would have to do some sort of schooling just to get back into it, whether it be a college, some sort of something. But would I use my BSc in a way to get me into something else? Absolutely.
Good.
I mean, I do not regret that study in my life. I learned so much. I know I have a knack for research, which, you know, the back of my ear, I always think, okay, maybe one day, and I have an idea, but I won't say what it is because it's my research idea. Not ready to share it yet. That if I wanted to do a PhD, it would kind of be the nice thing is I have the BSc. I would probably have to do some courses and things, but to do a PhD combining in the anatomy field, combining a few things I know. So it would have some vocal, it wouldn't necessarily be like a vocal ped. It would be, like I say, there's an idea there, and it behooves me that I have a master's in something. I have a science background. I have a BSc, and then, you know, with a few courses, I am not saying no to more school eventually in my life.
Atta girl.
Never too late.
I think that's really smart. And I also really feel it's important for any young musician these days to think about having some sort of other backup in their, you know, in their back pocket to go to when things are tough, you know?
Absolutely. I did during the time when we were in lockdown, I started doing, and I need to get back at it. This is me telling myself to do it, because I really, it's something I've always wanted to do and said I would do when I had time, was do a course in computer science and programming. So I did Harvard, but there's edX has all the free course, all sorts of free courses. Some of it's marketed as if you want to get like a full degree in it, you have to pay, but there's so many free courses that you can do. And it was, yeah, their computer science one, learning how to program in Python. And it was free. And it's in all online. And, you know, there are so many, there's some data management things. And I don't think it's ever bad to have extra skills. And even though I have a job, I was still like, it gave me comfort to work on something. So.
Yeah. Do you think that musicians typically are in a stage where they never stop learning anyway?
Exactly. And I would hope, I tend to surround myself with people of all sorts that never stop learning. I find when I meet people that are just very, and that works for so many people, but for me, I could never not be learning something.
Me too.
And it's just, and so I think most people are always learning in some way or another. So, and musicians take that to the next level.
Exactly right. Yes. There's always something new to learn about or discover about our musicianship. Here we go. So Christina, I'm curious, in all of your experience, whether you've had a funny moment or maybe even a little bit of an embarrassing one happen that you'd like to share with us.
So I'm lucky enough, I can't remember anything on stage. Maybe a friend would tell me, no, you forgot this one. But this was my first few months in Germany. I was having some medical issues and I wasn't in Stralsund, but it was a weekend. So I had to call the number to figure out what doctors are, because they don't have walk-in clinics the same way, but they have doctors on call in your area.
I see.
And so get the number for a doctor, call them, keep telling them about this Herzinfarkt, which was not what I was having. It was Harnwegsinfekt, but somewhere in my brain, I switched the words from what is a urinary tract infection to heart attack. Oh, and I was telling this lady, the woman that was the receptionist at this doctor, that I was having a heart attack and all I needed was antibiotics.
Oh no.
And she was stressing out and telling me that I had to go to the hospital, and I kept insisting that I just needed antibiotics. I finally hung up the phone, and then like took me about 2 minutes and I went, wait a second, my brain switched words on me. Don't ask me how. But then I called there was a second number, and I went there because I was too embarrassed to call. But that was an impressive, because I was so convinced on the phone that I was saying the right thing. And so, yes, I was the girl on the phone having a heart attack, needing antibiotics.
Very funny. And that's so typical of language, isn't it? That we, you know, we're dead straight that we've got the right wording, and we go in very, very enthusiastically and blow it up.
Then something goes wrong. And I think it was an Estonian thing that switched my brain somehow, but boy, it's my favorite German story.
That's very funny. Thank you for sharing it with us. You have provided me with a recording of one of your, it sounds like one of your favorite arias, because it's in French, as you mentioned.
Yes, right now it's a favorite. It's something that goes well. Generally,
I would love it if you introduced the piece to our audience and tell us why you love it so much.
It's from Werther by Massenet, and it's Va laisser couler mes larmes. And it is a beautiful piece, very short, which is sometimes a nice change from when we have to all sing these very long things, but it's kind of part of a longer sequence of scenes where Charlotte gets a letter from Bertel, and at this moment, her sister is there, and she's read this letter, and actually, I have to remember if she's read the letter, if it's, she's going, having a brain fart, which happens. But the, what's the, for, it's saying, please just leave me alone. Let me be. But at the same time, you can always feel when someone says, leave me alone, is when you need someone the most. And I love this because it's actually, it's not a conversation, but it's real, just communication. Sometimes arias are more monologues, which are beautiful and great. But I love this because it's sheer communication and telling your sister of all things. And so in an audition situation where I often would sing this, I find it so easy to just get into my place because I pick something, somebody, and just talk to them. And yes, it's dramatic, but it makes it so much easier to get into the swing of it in a moment. Because it is something so simple in some ways.
So what happens at the end of this story?
The end of this whole story, this is yet another, Werther does not, I mean, this is based on Goethe's epic story of one of many, or not epic, this is one of his epic, but this is classic opera where it's Goethe wrote in German, which then was written into French by a French composer. years and years later, but classic. It doesn't end well for Werther, I'll say that much. Charlotte does not go with him, and he is not very happy about that. We'll say that much.
A little bit another of heartbreak.
The heartbreak and deaths and all the, I mean, that's what opera's about, is the reason the stories are so big is because there has to be an emotional reason why we're singing so big and with such fullness of voice. And I always think it's the big stories that make us want to sing the way we do. And it's the big emotions.
It is. It truly is. Well, Christina, I am so excited to get to listen to your Werther and to share it with everybody. And I would like to thank you for chatting with me today.
And I would also like to say, just because I have I pronounce this correctly because I'm, as we all are. So it's accompanied by, which I think it's always the biggest thing that we need to make sure to say who our accompanists or who our collaborators are. And so I also want to say that the Werther, the Charlotte, is on the piano is Pantelis Polykonidis, who's a fantastic coach and pianist in Vienna. I just wanted to make sure that was said.
Very important. I agree. We can't forget those people who support us and teach us and are there for us. Sometimes they cover our behinds when we need them to the most. So very important. Yeah, very nice of you to remember to do that. So anyway, thank you again. And
thank you so much.
And I'm just thrilled to be able to kick off this whole podcast with you. It's been lovely speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye for now, Christina.
Bye for now. Thank you.
You have been listening to mezzo-soprano Christina Maria Auger singing Charlotte's aria, Va, laissez couler mes larmes, from Massenet's Werther. We hope you will join us next week when we feature another mezzo, Megan Reimer-Larios. Thank you for listening to Classical Voice Canada.